Whoever you are, we welcome you. Wherever you come from, we welcome you. We are the Unitarian Universalist Church of Kent, and I am Worship Associate Eric Van Bars, and I'm joined by Deb Biggins today. And we welcome, with a broken elevator and a broken staircase and a heat wave, we welcome the stalwart and the brave to service this morning. If anyone needs assistance getting out or going downstairs again, we certainly have the resources to assist. So if you just see us after the service, we can help you get back down to ground level after today. And we thank you for being here.
We light the chalice today for all those affected by sexual trauma. I have a quote for you from Norman Vincent Peale. Stand up to your obstacles and do something about them. You will find that they haven't half the strength you think they have.
The creative spirit has the ability to heal as well as to inspire others. And I'm always amazed at the power of poetry to be able to both be a creative outlet and a source of healing. The following poem is from Pandora's Project, which offers support and resources for survivors of sexual abuse. The poem is entitled Courage by Priyanka Sahi. Courage is what we need to move on. Willingness to fight and look for a new dawn. Hope in our heart and dream in our eyes. We should aim to become noble and wise. Speak truth and encouraging youth. Raising the bar and moving at par. Crossing every hurdle, every hour, with a destination so near and yet so far. Endurance to withstand hardship or stress. Endowing our lives to achieving our best. Oh, great spirit of life, we recognize there are wonders and joys in this world. We also recognize and realize there's great pain and sorrow. We want to give our support and our love and our caring hearts out to all those who suffer. And know there is inequity in suffering. Support those who are able to overcome their grief and woes quickly, and those who struggle with it for many, many years. We hope and believe that there is joy and salvation at the end of everyone's long journey. And send healing thoughts and prayers to all who need our concern. In the name of life. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Deb Biggins, and this is my journey of living and loving after sexual trauma. I'll try to get through this without crying. Okay. This part is called living. Living and loving after sexual trauma can be accomplished with lots of support, counseling, and love. If you've never experienced this traumatic abuse, consider yourself lucky. It is one of the most difficult things to admit, discuss, or get over, if that's even possible. While you may never get over it, you can learn to deal with it and pack it away in the deep recesses of your mind and begin to move forward with your life. This is the journey of how I found my voice. I was able to speak out about the trauma and no longer be a victim, but rather a survivor. The first incident occurred when I was around 8 years old. There was an older boy in the neighborhood who would gather the little girls around together in his garage and play truth or dare. His questions were always ones he knew we could not get right, so we had to do his dares. Of course, the dares were in sexual nature. And I realized only later that it was abuse. In order to make us do what he wanted, he would ask us, "Do you want to be the only one not playing or participating in the game? Do you?" And of course, at that young age, no one wanted to be left out of anything. He was a bigger boy, stronger than we were, and would situate himself to always be threatening. For example, he would have us sit in a circle and in the middle of the garage floor, yet he would always be seated up on a high chair or a box. So he was higher than us, appearing even bigger than he was. He repeatedly said to me that if I would tell, he would make my life a living hell. And besides, no one will believe you anyway. Unfortunately, this set the stage for a reoccurring theme in my life. Those words also play a huge role in keeping me in the victim role for a very long time. To this day, I can describe to you how the garage looked, the lighting, the layout, the smell of the place, etc. When I was around 16 years old, I got asked out on a date with an older boy from town. He took me to this back road and parked the car. He started to put the moves on me, and I was uncomfortable and told him no. Of course, he was stronger than I was and continued his advances to the point where I became afraid and scared for my life. My mind was racing, and I started to think about how to get out of this situation. When he proceeded to get me down in the seat and get into my pants, my survivor mode took over, and I reached for anything I could find on the car floor. I came up with a small crowbar and threatened him with it. I told him to back off, and he started to back off and get off of me. I got out of the car, took off as fast as I could, and started running. I ended up at a friend's house, told her what had happened, and she said, "Well, we need to tell the police or authorities." Immediately, my guard went up, and I said, "No." I said, because deep down, I could hear my first abuser telling me, "No one will believe you." And I really thought no one would believe me. During middle school, I became friends with a lady that's much older than me. She was a teacher, and we have remained friends for over 30 years. We are not as close as we once were, and I'll tell you why. One day when I was in the youth group at this church, I was asked to go, you know, do an errand and go pick up her dad at the house and, you know, bring him to the church for a picnic. I said, okay. I walked into the house, announcing myself so he would know I was there. He replied, stating he was in the living room. I went in to get him, and he was seated right near the doorway. As I entered the doorway, he grabbed me and pulled me down into his lap. Needless to say, I was in shock and couldn't move for a moment or two. He proceeded to undo my pants and reach inside. I quickly jumped off and took off. I went back to the church to get my friend, and I told her we needed to talk. Then I told her what had happened. We went back to the house. He came outside, and I told him that I told them what he had did. And he said out loud in front of all of us, "I can't believe you would tell," because I had his wife there and her husband. And then his daughter looked at me, who was my good friend, and said, "Oh, it didn't happen. Let's just forget about it." I got into my car and left. I was hurt and crushed. I went home and threw all my clothes in the trash and never told another soul what had happened until many years later. I avoided her for a while, and about a month later, I went to the farm where she and her husband had lived. I ended up talking to her husband about it. He believed me, but I didn't want to put him in the middle, so I just let it go. But I did feel better knowing he believed me. It was awkward to be out at their place, and I avoided her father, and he knew it. I realized much later how those few words once again cemented the idea that no one would believe me. And looking back, it changed my relationship with her forever. The fact that she didn't believe me, even after her father basically admitted it right in front of her, hurts me to this day.
When clinical psychiatrist Judith Herman's Trauma and Recovery from Domestic Abuse to Political Terror was initially published in 1992, It changed the way we believe about and treat traumatic events and trauma victims. Herman was the first to identify and apply the term complex post-traumatic stress disorder to a variety of symptoms present in trauma victims. In 1997, Herman chronicled the incredible response to her book and explained how the troubles surrounding the topic of trauma and recovery have shifted within the clinical community and also within our culture. Trauma and recovery brings a new level of understanding to a set of troubles normally considered individual and individually. Herman draws on her own cutting-edge study of domestic violence together with a vast literature of combat veterans and victims of political terror to show the parallels between private terrors like rape and public traumas like terrorism. The book puts individual encounters in a broader political frame and argues that the psychological trauma might be understood only in social context. Following are some of the readings from this book. Many survivors seek the resolution of the traumatic experiences within the confines of their personal lives. But a significant minority, as a result of trauma, feel called upon to engage a wider community. Survivors undertake to speak about the unspeakable in public because it is the belief that this will help others, and in doing so, they feel connected to the power larger than themselves. It is richly empowering to have transformed experiences into the ability to offer something worthwhile to other survivors. Survivors of sexual assault who speak out publicly create change in the silence that surrounds such crimes. The act of speaking out can end the false sense of shame that victims often carry. Hearing another survivor cast off her shame may inspire other victims of abuse to come forward and do the same. Sexual assault and the wounds flourish in it, and its wounds flourish in an atmosphere of secrecy, silence, and myth. Speaking out brings these to light. The courage of survivors prepared to speak has agitated for legal change, brought about improvements in therapeutic approaches, and undermines, in a very powerful sense, the way social myths about sexual assault that promote acceptance of such crimes. The act of speaking out has the power to heal and change in a broader scale than many survivors are even aware of. In speaking out, you become part of the destroying forces that have harmed and hurt you. This can be one of the greatest experiences in one's own healing and can reduce both fear and shame. If you are contemplating speaking out, there are things you may want to first consider, namely your own physical and emotional safety. There is nothing wrong in declining to speak out if you are still in danger, and even if you choose to speak out anonymously, you are still doing much good to yourself and to your community. We thank Deb today for having the courage to speak out. We're grateful for her strength, and this community lends healing to her and to other victims that may be going through same experiences. Thank you.
I call this part surviving. When I was around 23 years old, I was stationed in Schweinfurt, Germany with the Army. I had experienced another episode of sexual abuse and harassment. I was the only female truck driver in a motor pool, and my motor pool sergeant began sexually harassing me early on. He repeatedly requested sexual favors in return for faster promotions to higher ranks. I told him clearly no. I still felt very threatened. Not only was he a higher rank, he was physically larger than I was. I have to realize, when I was in the Army, I was only maybe 120 pounds soaking wet. So he began taking me into his office, closing the door. He would repeatedly request sexual favors, and I would constantly say no. I started fearing it would force me to have sex, so I told a friend of mine. She advised me to keep my guard up, but if he acted on his threats, I'd have to watch because no one would believe me over a superior officer. Once again, instilling in my belief that no one would believe me if I told. So I didn't tell. Not until just recently, which brings me up to the present time. This part is called loving. Last year, after being in a relationship with Meg for over a year, I decided I needed to start dealing with what I had been through most of my life. I know I'm a slow learner, but we'll work with that. It was time I decided that I was no longer going to be the victim. I began an intense program sponsored through the VA to help victims of MST, which is military sexual trauma. And what does that tell you? They have a whole program just for this. So it's kind of sad to think about it, but I'm happy it's available. Anyway, I had to talk about all my past abusers and write them out too. So in other words, I had to relive everything again. This was some of the hardest work I've ever done. And believe me, I've done some hard labor in life. I've dairy farmed, I was a McDonald's manager, and a juvenile corrections officer. But I think writing this out and dealing with this is the hardest job ever. At about this same time frame, I decided to finish my degree in social work, majoring in mental health and counseling. But I figured I couldn't be a very effective counselor if I didn't take care of my own issues first. So speaking of issues, some of them that manifested over the years were anger issues, putting up walls, not allowing anyone to get close to me because I felt that I was dirty and I didn't want them to see me that way. And fear of intimacy, feeling broken like a used toy or a used car, then you will never be new again. Alcohol abuse, depression, seclusion, just to name a few. Over the course of several months, I met with my counselor once a week and began my journey of healing. Throughout this process, I began to realize that I'm a survivor, and I have been for many years. Although that one boy, when I was 8, was able to get the better of me and get away with his abuse, I was able to stand up for myself and say no several other times in my life. I was a survivor. I never really realized that until I went through this process. Realizing this has helped me open myself up more and has allowed me to have better and more meaningful relationships, not only with my wife Meg, but with friends and family too. I don't need those high walls anymore. And you know what? It really didn't help me. Walls don't help. They just keep it away. It just made me feel distant from those around me. As part of my healing, I've confronted some of the people who I felt were not there for me in the past. I have worked on my intimate relationship with Meg, and I've explained a lot of my past to my sisters in a heartfelt letter, and in person I talked to my mom about it. My mom never knew of anything that had happened until recently. I don't think I could have done all the hard work without the help of Meg's love and support. She has been so patient through this whole process, and it's brought us closer together. Today, I still struggle with some of the issues I've mentioned, but before, I am feeling very optimistic about the future. I put together a list of local counseling resources, and it will be available in the back on your way out if you need it, for yourself or for someone else you know. I am also available to talk or listen. Just let me know, and I'll get you my contact information. I want to thank you for listening and becoming a part of my continuing journey.
I'd like to share a song by Unitarian Universalist minister and songwriter Fred Small, and it's called A Light in the Hall, and it tells the story of sexual trauma and living and loving after sexual trauma. There's a light in the hall, There's a crack in the door, we let it into my room. It tells me everything. It tells me everything. I curl up in a ball, try to slide in the crack between the bed and the wall. I am falling. I am falling. Well, Daddy, they'll know. I'll walk funny and they'll know I've been bad. Daddy, please don't. Please don't, please don't. I'm shaking all over. Squeeze my legs together just as tight as I can. You can't, you can't. You can. Okay, okay, okay. I see the tree through the window. The tree is my friend. I see the moon through the clouds and the stars without end. I am flying away. I am dying. Is there a cradle big enough for this little girl? It wouldn't it be so very big for a girl and a teddy bear and a patchwork quilt? It's waiting somewhere for me. Don't tell anyone if you know what's good for you and your little sister. Don't you love your sister? And who would believe you? Just a little girl with a big imagination. Everyone knows me. I'm an important man. Get ready for school. My hair is brushed, pull tight in the bow, but I am dirty. Yes, I am dirty. Mama puts on my coat. Red and purple blotches up and down my leg. She won't look at me. She won't look at me. I will run to the park. I will climb on the swing. I will swing so high up above everything. Till a cloud takes me away. Is there a cradle big enough this little girl? It wouldn't have to be so very big for a girl and a teddy bear and a patchwork quilt. It's waiting somewhere for me. Now I am grown. On a silver chain I wear a pretty stone. Friend gave me to say she loves me and to say I can love and to say I am worthy of it. It is not easy. It is not easy. Sometimes I scream. Sometimes I weep like that little girl. I never was. I never was. I tell the story. Somebody stole my life, but I'm getting it back. I can see colors. I can see colors now. Tracing the truth through the tangle of lies. Forgiving myself what I did to survive. I am living. I am living. Is there a cradle big enough for this little girl? It wouldn't have to be so very big for a girl and a teddy bear and a patchwork quilt. It's waiting somewhere. It's waiting somewhere for me.
Sorrow will one day turn to joy. All that breaks the heart and oppresses the soul will one day give place to peace and understanding, and everyone will be free.
We thank everyone for being witness today. Go in peace.